guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America, Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are those guardians, and we have a mission, folks. I have just become aware of something through my network of people, and I've just become aware of it. It came out in 2011, and it's called Preventing Gun Violence Through Effective Messaging, prepared by Frank O'Brien, OMP, John Neffinger, and Matthew Kohut of KNP Communications, and Al Quinlan of Greenberg Quinlan Rossner Research. And this is a pamphlet. It's an 80-page pamphlet. I'm going to read you selected portions of it and talk about some of the... this is copyright 2012 by Frank O'Brien, and all rights are reserved. I'm not going to plagiarize the thing. I'm going to read you selected sections on it. So, because this stuff is really, really irritating. I mean, I might even start out this hour by saying I am really ticked at reading some of this stuff, and as much sometimes as moral outrage as I run across. So you may want to take some notes on this, and you definitely are going to want to hear it again on the archive at libertywatchradio.com in the right column. This will be the top one in the right column on America Armed and Free as soon as I post it later on this afternoon. And this is a guide. This guide, again, is called, let me scroll up to the top of it, Preventing Gun Violence Through Effective Messaging is the name of this. And if you Google around for it, you will find it on the Internet. How to use this guide. In the second half of 2011, Greenberg Quinlan Rossner Research conducted an extensive survey research project that took a deep look at American attitudes towards guns, violence, and advocacy around gun violence prevention. The research drew a vivid portrait of the attitudes and opinions by a number of key audiences and offered clear messaging guidance for those advocating a more vigorous effort to build public support for critical gun violence prevention measures. Stop. No, it doesn't. It provides a very clear path to fornicate our freedom. That's exactly what this is about. This is 80 pages of how to do your freedom from the backside. That's the polite version. Okay? This message guide builds on research. It has been prepared by a team of communicators who have brought to the table decades of experience advising organizations on message development and strategic communications. Whenever you hear strategic communications, I want you to put a parenthesis around that, and I want you to, in your head, say, lying! Thank you. I rarely yell on the radio. At least I turned away from the microphone. Now, on to this. This guide is intended to help organizations and individuals choose effective arguments and language when communicating with the public on behalf of stronger public policies to prevent gun violence. Read Freedom. It is not intended to offer media training advice on topics such as how to prepare for a media appearance or advice about specific media such as how to write a press release or prepare a compelling email message. The purpose is to offer clear advice about effective frames and messages across a broad variety of communication opportunities. You want the translation? How do we create framing bias against freedom? That's what it's called. So, to the summary of research. We won't by any means attempt a complete report on research findings, but it does seem worthwhile to highlight a few points. The overall landscape. Advocates for gun violence prevention win the logical debate, but lose on more emotional terms. Bull feathers. The only thing they have is the emotional arguments. The logic is completely on the side of the argument for freedom and the right to keep and bear arms. Two, there's an intensity gap that has been built over the years in the general public. Those who view themselves as supporters of gun rights are more deeply committed to and emotionally invested in their position than those supporting stronger gun violence prevention measures. All right, let me translate. But there's an intensity gap. Yeah, it's because the people who are against the right to keep and bear arms don't have passion because they don't have the facts. They don't understand the issues. All they have is emotions. They have no reason. When you have no reason, you have no edge, you have no corner, you have no handle upon which to grasp reality. So thrashing about in order to form a grasp, you lose your passion. Of course they have less. Generally speaking, people are unfamiliar with and surprised to learn how easy current laws make it to acquire guns and carry loaded weapons. Loaded weapons is a loaded term. What use would a weapon be if it wasn't loaded? Think about this. Just the most basic question. If your weapon, whatever that weapon is, I don't care if it's a knife. If it's closed, it is in effect unloaded if it's a folding knife. If it's closed, all it is a club. What good would a knife be if it wasn't, quote, loaded, unquote, in other words, ready to cut? What good would a gun be if it wasn't ready to shoot? Listen to Michael Savage a few weeks ago. Just make a fool of himself talking about, well, if George Zimmerman was carrying a gun with a loaded chamber. Look, folks, I've been a professional firearms instructor for 18 years. And if a student comes to me and tells me that he wants to carry a gun with an unloaded chamber, my response to him is going to be, go find another instructor. You're not serious. The purpose of a weapon is to do damage and to inflict lawful, and I mean lawful, deadly force on someone, or the threat of lawful deadly force. By definition, a weapon with the chamber unloaded is not a weapon in a condition ready to inflict lawful deadly force. If you want to carry a gun, or you want other people to carry guns with empty chambers, what you're doing is you are causing the weapon, in effect, to be temporarily at least decommissioned. I'm not a member of the decommissioning franchise or philosophy, and you won't get me to convert to it. Four, there's a wide personal experience with gun violence. 40% of respondents report that they or someone they know personally has been a victim of gun violence. Well, guns don't cause violence, people do. And if I wanted to say I'd been a victim of it, I've been shot at, but I don't consider myself a victim. I'm the victor of that violence, and I didn't inflict any. I'll tell the story some other time. Key messages. One, there's three messages. One, the serious personal toll that gun violence takes on people's lives. Two, the people's right to be free from violence in their communities. And three, the changing nature of weapons towards more powerful military ones that make us less safe. First of all, the serious toll that gun violence takes on people's lives. Well, if they want to be honest about it, gun violence has been going down since about 1990, and it's gone down over 20% since then. Probably more, I'm not looking at the statistics in front of me. Gun violence has been going down significantly in the United States. Now, there's some areas in the country which are a problem. There are 75 counties in the United States which are a problem, which if you remove those counties from the statistics would be almost none. Furthermore, more than half of the so-called gun violence statistics that are quoted are suicides. And while suicide is not something we want to promote, you have to take it out of the violence statistics in terms of guns. There's about 34,000, actually, the last year we counted, which I think is 2011, there were about 32,000 deaths by firearm, of which about 19,000 were suicide. So now we're talking about under 16,000 deaths, which is a tragedy, but it's a country of over 330 million people. You've got to put it in perspective. Two, people's right to be free from violence in their communities. Look, there is certainly an implied right to what's called the peaceful enjoyment of your life. There is certainly that, but it's an implied right. Nowhere in the Constitution do you find you have a right to be free from your government abusing your rights, but there's no constitutional right for you to be free from other people infringing on your rights. It is up to you to protect yourself. I've said many times, yo-yo and yo-yo, you're on your own and you own your own result. Three, the changing nature of weapons towards more powerful military-style ones that make us less safe. Again, bullspit. Weapons haven't changed that much lately. The design that Theodore Roosevelt hunted with in semi-automatics with a magazine hanging out the bottom, as Stephen Wenger loves to call them, bottom feeder rifles, has been around for well over 100 years. There is nothing changing about the nature or the design of weapons. What's changed a little bit is the color of them. We call them black rifles. Yes, there's a trend towards more black rifles. Do you know why? Because they sell well. That's why. And if the military has a weapon, and the civilians' taxes pay for the military, why shouldn't the civilians have the same rifles that their taxes pay for? Why do we even have restrictions on machine guns? There hasn't been a crime committed with a lawfully owned machine gun in 75 years. They're not a problem. Yet the new manufacturer of them for the civilian market is banned. Why? They're not a problem. The only guns that have been used in crimes are guns held unlawfully by people who are not lawfully allowed to possess them. Why shouldn't the civilians have them? They're great. They're fun. They're interesting. And now, since you can't get new ones made since 1986, they're a tremendous investment. Why wouldn't the public want to have more real military weapons rather than faux ones like the AR-15, which are semi-automatic? The notion that today's weapons are different in kind from what was available in the past is an especially powerful idea and helps make the case for new levels of concern and scrutiny, with an emphasis on scrutiny around access to weapons. Folks, it's a lie. And this is a pamphlet about people teaching you how to take advantage, or teaching others how to take advantage of a lie. Now they talk about matching messages to audiences. On the gun violence issue, as on most public issues, it pays to know as much about possible about who you're talking to. In other words, they're talking about tailoring your message to your audience. Okay, all speakers do that in public speaking. But what they're talking about here is which facts to withhold from your audience in order to make your point. It is deeply disingenuous. Two, the weight and power of the three key themes we have mentioned varies substantially by the audience. In other words, you're going to select your facts for your audience. As a result, when the opportunity arises to target your message, there's great advantage to doing so. For example, when talking to men, it's important to know that they are much more motivated by protecting people from gun crime than preventing gun violence. Women are motivated by both. And to discuss the NRA is another example. It's critical to know that our base supporters are very critical of the NRA's role in enabling gun violence, but most general audiences view the NRA as a mainstream organization. So in other words, what they're saying here is that in order to make your point, you've got to do it in such a way that the people at the fringes of the argument are most inflamed by it. This is deeply, deeply disingenuous. It is teaching, it is Alinskyism. This is an encapsulated form of Alinskyism. And I will remind you that in the dedication of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, his number three dedication is to the world's first activist, someone who is so successful that he got his very own world. Satan.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
It's your right, your responsibility, defending life, defending liberty from kings and tyrants, murderers and thieves. So spread the word till all.
No, it shall not, but it is frequently, and it's up to you and I to defend it, because the Constitution will not defend itself. Ultimately, the Constitution is a piece of paper, and I know it hurts for some people who are patriotic, for a guy who's also perceived as being patriotic, which I am, to say something like that, but the Constitution is a piece of paper. It is only made whole when you and I defend it. And there's a famous statement, all that's needed for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing, by Mr. Burke. So, going back to this pamphlet that was designed to teach activists, anti-freedom activists, how to activate, it says the gun violence prevention movement, which is a euphemistic term. They're talking about gun banners. The gun violence prevention movement is dormant in the public imagination. That's not to say there isn't an interested audience out there, just that there's a major lack of awareness of where to go or become engaged on gun violence prevention. Now they're talking about the NRA. Because of the organization's name and identity, it is more powerful, especially when talking to the base, to discuss the specific NRA rather than a generic gun lobby. Of course it is. Because to the anti-freedom bigots, the NRA is the gun lobby. The NRA, folks, is an organization of approximately 5 million out of the 80 million gun owners in the United States. What the reason they want to do it is right out of Alinsky. Find an enemy, isolate it, and freeze it. They're using the NRA as a straw man, which is wonderful for organizations like the Arizona Citizens Defense League. Let them shoot at the NRA. We'll go ahead and do what we do. All right. What they don't understand, what the anti-freedom bigots, if they understood the gun lobby, they think the gun lobby is the manufacturers and the NRA. And certainly, they're a part of the gun lobby. But they aren't the whole thing. Who is the gun lobby, folks? Yell it at your speakers right now. Who's the gun lobby? Who is it? Tom, who is the gun lobby in the United States? No, it's not. It's you. It's me. Right. It's you and I. It's the people who practice the right to keep and bear arms, and we activate to our legislators to make sure that bad laws don't get passed and good laws do. I am the gun lobby. You are the gun lobby. Now, I'm a focal point of it because I had a national organization, JPFO, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, and I'm also on the board of the Arizona Citizens Defense League and one of its co-founders. So I truly am the gun lobby. But I am much more the gun lobby than the manufacturers are. The manufacturers do not take that active a role. Sure, they have lobbyists. Yes, they hire them. But they do that so that the steamroller of government doesn't roll over their business. Right? When they focus on the when they're afraid to focus on the gun lobby because they know the gun lobby is probably half of the 80 million people who are gun owners in the United States. That's a significant portion of the population. Police and other law enforcement officials have excellent standing with most Americans and are a crucial ally to gun violence prevention advocates. For most audience, the testimony of police and other law enforcement officers is compelling and trustworthy. That's true. That's why you always see the president trying to hide behind senior members of law enforcement when they sign bills that take our freedom away. But the rank and file cop on the street is not an advocate of such laws. There's a recent study, and pardon me for not having it in front of me when I talked about this, that the rank and file of police officers are about 80% against any new gun laws. In fact, many of them are suing in the states in Colorado and in New York so that they don't have to enforce what they believe is unconstitutional. And those are even senior level people, sheriffs, elected sheriffs and such. There's 82 sheriffs in Colorado out of the 86 there who are suing the state because of their new laws. What's more, the fact that policies advocated by NRA put law enforcement officials at risk seriously weakens the arguments. Bullspit. The NRA and law enforcement are pretty tight. They have a division which trains law enforcement. And I will tell you right now that nothing that the gun lobby advocates is against police. Let me give you an example. In 2010 in Arizona, we got constitutional carry because our organization, the Arizona Citizens Defense League, AZCDL.org, every one of you listening should be a member of this. Every single one of you should be a member. We have a basic level of membership which anybody can afford. Even a guy on the street who called in earlier can afford it. Right? We have sustaining and life memberships as well, but I mean anybody can afford to be a member of the organization. We got constitutional carry in 2011, and one of the things that happened in Arizona is it became legal in most places in Arizona to carry a concealed weapon on your body or in your car without a permit. However, it used to be a misdemeanor to use that concealed weapon in a crime. Part of that legislation also changed from a misdemeanor to a felony using that concealed weapon in a crime. What we did made it safer for police officers because now they can charge a person who's carrying a concealed weapon with a whole other crime, which is a felony, and can add years to their sentence if they're misusing the gun. But if they're not misusing the gun, if it's you or me driving down the street with Sally with a gun in her purse or Jimmy with a gun in his belt line or in a holster that's clipped to the bottom of his seat, it's in his car, it is no longer a crime in Arizona to do that as long as you're not in certain places like a hydroelectric facility, a nuclear facility, a polling place on election day, the grounds of a school. Now, we can all argue about these things, but no right is absolute, and government does have the authority to make some rules. That's a different argument for a different day. I'm going to come back to this. powerful images and facts coming back to this brochure called the Gun Violence Messaging Guide. I want you folks, when this program is done, Google this, Gun Violence Messaging Guide. And I don't want you to get mad at anybody for writing it. They do what they do. By publishing this thing, the authors have given us a wonderful guide to how to counter their arguments. And that's what I want you to do. I don't want you to get mad at the authors. You can't get mad at a scorpion for stinging, okay? You can't get mad at a venomous snake for biting. These venomous snakes have just revealed themselves. And what I want you to do is I want you to get a copy of this and learn it, because it's great information that you can use not only to defeat those arguments, but to disparage them and to cause them to lose all hope in the cause of fornicating your freedom. And I don't get to the edge of profanity very often. I'm at it right now. Powerful facts and images. Alarming facts. Open the door to action. And powerful stories put feeling and emotional energy behind the facts. Folks, facts ought to support themselves. They don't need emotional energy. It's not helpful to try to drown your audience in a flurry of facts and statistics. It's far more effective to zero in. You know, it's interesting. They have to even use gun analogies to make their point. It's more effective to zero in on a handful of simple facts that are both compelling and memorable. Here are some of the facts that met that test in our research. There are no background checks or ID requirements in most states for private sales, including private sales at gun shows or on radio programs either. That's true. It's an open and notorious fact. There is no background check or ID for private sales, including private sales at gun shows. You know why? Well, it's because it's a private sale. It is a lawful item transacted between two lawful people. What they don't say in this powerful fact and image is, in Arizona, it's a felony to give a gun to someone you believe will either use it in a crime or as a prohibited possessor. Don't trust me. Look it up. It's Arizona Revised Statutes, Title 13, Part 3102. ARS 13-3102. I told you folks, you're going to need notes on this. Look it up. If you sell a gun to a person you believe is a prohibited possessor, or is not entitled for whatever reason, is disqualified from owning a gun, they've got a felony, they've been thrown out of the military on a dishonorable, they've been adjudicated mentally incompetent, they're here in the country or in the state illegally, or they're from another state, you can't legally sell a gun to them in Arizona. And if you knowingly do that, it's a felony. And for them to not mention that in this pamphlet about powerful facts and images, Gun Violence Messaging Guide, is, frankly, it's a framing bias. Two, there are virtually no restrictions on the type of weapons available for purchase in America, including assault weapons and ammunition magazines that store up to 100 bullets and can shoot 20 rounds in 10 seconds. Well, that's true. Let's look at it. First of all, it's true in part. There are virtually no restrictions on the type of weapons. There are vast restrictions on the type of weapons. Fully automatic weapons, or what are legitimately assault rifles, are very heavily regulated, and they have been since 1934. So that portion of it is a lie. But in terms of there being no restrictions on the type, whether it's revolver, whether it's semi-automatic, whether it's muzzle loading, whether it's lever action, whether it's bolt action, of course there's no restrictions on it. There shouldn't be any restrictions on it. That's called lawful and normal. Caller, you got about 20 seconds. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to ask that question about the ammo. I want to know what the deal is with this perceived shortage of ammo.
It's not perceived. It's real, Greg.
Can you explain it to me?
Yeah. It's called there's a lot of people wanting to buy more than there is out there.
Is it some sort of like a gold rush thing where there's a crash being created by hoarders, guys that feel like that they're Armageddon's upon us and they're going to protect themselves with 22s? Is that sort of what it is?
Well,
or is there a problem with cartridge brass being used for the huge order that I read about?
No, the orders of the military and the Homeland Security Department are not that terribly significant in terms of the supply. They're trying to crowd out the civilian market to the extent they can, but they can't. There's 5 billion rounds of ammunition sold in the United States every year. A portion of that is to law enforcement and military, but it's not the most significant portion. Most of it is the civilian market. And when you constrict the market, whenever you drive up the demand massively, the demand has been driven hugely up by the debate, by the anti-freedom bigots attempting to you to dance in the blood of the victims of the Colorado movie theaters and Sandy Hook and the Tucson one. It's the anti-freedom bigots attempting to use that to screw us out of our rights, to do exactly what they're talking about in this gun violence messaging guide, to use those arguments to remove our rights from us. And the natural result is that people panic and they think, well, gosh, I better go buy ammo. And when a whole bunch of them do that, it causes what amounts to a run on the bank. That's what's happening now.
Wow. And there's a big problem with 22, is that correct?
100% correct.
Wow.
And there's nothing wrong with defending yourself with a 22 if that's what you have. If all you have is a 22, it's way better than a semi-automatic baseball bat. And a 22 will work just fine at 200 yards. And if you take a round that's subsonic and you put it in a rifle, you will also create what I call the poor man's silencer. And a Ruger 10/22 will function because it has a rotary magazine, will function and feed with that low-power ammo. It will make about this much noise. That's about how loud it will be.
Without a pop bottle.
Yeah. Well, that's illegal. Putting subsonic ammunition in a long barrel so that all the powder is burnt, as well, there's two noises that a gun makes, boom and crack. Those are the two noises that it makes. Boom is thunder. It's high-speed air hitting low-speed air. And if most of the air, most of the driving force behind the cartridge has expired before the bullet leaves the barrel, you're not going to get much boom. The other noise you hear is crack. And that's the noise you hear more with a 22. The reason is what you're hearing is the bullet breaking the sound barrier. If you have ammunition that is subsonic, the bullet does not then break the sound barrier, and you have a very, very quiet gun.
Awesome.
There's nothing illegal about it. In fact, it's a moral thing to do. And the other thing is, it makes it quieter and less stress on your ears, on your body. All right, Greg.
I like the sound of that.
All right, you have a great day. AM 1030, KVY, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice. If you have a question about the topic on the table, you're welcome to. If you don't, please just listen and take notes. There's a lot more to go.
It is said that you can't buy happiness. Well, going back to my childhood, many of my fondest memories revolve around my grandfather's house and a certain model 1894 Daisy lever-action BB rifle. Many fine hours spent plinking off a cookie tin lid at 60 feet produced some memorable sounds. Dreams of Lucas McCain's rifle danced in my head. One too many detonating incandescent light bulbs later, that Daisy BB gun got to be somebody else's. And ever since that day, I've been pining for one. Recently, I stopped in at Frontier Guns at 3156 East Grant Road and was perusing the racks. Sitting there was my Daisy lever action. Only $25 made it mine and me a happy man, or shall we say, a happy kid again. Find the rifle of your dreams at Frontier Guns, 3156 East Grant Road, 325-9880. That's 325-9880.
Welcome back to America Armed and Free. We've got a lot to talk about. Callers, hold on. Tom, you wanted to make a quick point?
I do, Charles. I came across this the other day, perusing some of the blogs. Basically, I read the whole 80 pages. I did notice that towards the end of their little booklet there, that they kind of counter their little protest. They're basically talking about the abolishment of private ownership of arms. And they don't actually come right out and say it, but they inferred in so many ways that it's pretty plain.
Yeah, well, I think that's been my argument through the whole explanation I've been making, that they're using lies, just out-and-out lies to
absolutely.
To
but
make
there's
a point.
Another concept to this. They're talking about, what they're talking to their base and having meetings and whatnot, they're using a process called facilitation, and everybody out there needs to be very well aware of what's going on. Facilitation is when you call a meeting with an agenda that is already laid out. And the end of the meeting, the object of the meeting has already been determined and the outcome has already been cast in stone. And what you're doing is convincing people instead of getting input. It's a ruse.
Ergo, the look of panic on Steve Kozacik's face when I showed up at that facilitated meeting at the church on Paseo del Norte.
Precisely.
And he wanted to know how many activists I brought with me. You know, when the people fear the government, it's tyranny, and when the government fear the people, it's liberty.
It's liberty.
That's right.
Good luck.
And out loud and in the clear, there is no amount of emotion that could make me want to do any damage to any elected official. I don't know of any people whom you and I, Tom, hang around with who want as their object to hurt or damage government. What we'd like to do is repair it, not hurt it.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're not here to do damage. We're here to do first aid.
This is correct, sir. And you're doing a very good job of it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And we don't want to do it through ballistic therapy.
Absolutely not.
We do not, yeah. All right, enjoy. Topic, how gun violence can be prevented. Key messaging principles. I'm back to gun violence messaging guide. Number one, start with people, not laws. In discussing why so many people are needlessly dying from gun violence, they're not. Don't fall immediately into a discussion of laws. Start with the fact that people are needlessly dying as a result of gun violence. Laws matter because if they're strong enough, they can keep people alive. What a lie. Was it already illegal for the guy in Tucson who shot 18 people? Was that already illegal? Did laws keep any of the people who were killed alive? Number two, back to gun violence messaging guide. Make it clear that weak and reckless policies put weapons in the hands of dangerous people. No, they don't. Lack of enforcement against dangerous people is what allows them to stay armed. If you took the constabulary effort in places like the People's Republic of New York and the People's Republic of New Jersey and the People's Republic of California, and you put those constabulary efforts towards going after the bad guys. There was a great movie a number of years ago with Roy Scheider, called The Seven Ups. If you just go after the serious 7-year felony crime criminals and up, you will vastly cut into the amount of crime in the United States. You know what else you do? If you enforce the immigration laws, you would cut into the amount of crime in the United States. Ooh, there's a politically incorrect statement. Make it clear that weak and reckless policies put weapons in the hands of dangerous people. It doesn't have to be this way. Also emphasize the needless nature of gun violence. Make it clear that gun violence is rampant in America because sensible gun laws have been undone. Reckless new measures have been passed, and glaring loopholes in our current laws have been allowed to remain open. Let me give a memo to those folks. In Wisconsin, they got concealed carry a couple years ago. And I think Wisconsin's eventually going to go constitutional carry. In other words, they won't need all that silly bureaucratic nonsense. There is no place in America where it is legal for a convicted felon or a person who is an illegal user of drugs to carry a gun. It's been illegal since 1968. And the people who try to tell you this stuff, like the authors of Gun Violence Messaging Guide, are not only liars, they're teachers of liars. They're attempting to teach people how to lie in order to make their point. Back to their article. Number three, with base audiences, emphasize the uniquely destructive role that the NRA plays. When talking to base audiences, put responsibility for stunning lack of common sense in America's gun laws where it belongs, at the feet of the NRA. Well, I got news for you. I got my issues with NRA too, but it's not for being too good on guns, it's for being too soft. And I understand the NRA's position too. They're between a rock and a hard place. They can't advocate any harder sometimes for what they do because the media does exactly what this thing tells them to do, is demonize them for trying to have some reasonable laws. All right? Now, what do I mean by reasonable? It is reasonable that if someone is going to come into your school to murder your children, to have someone who's competent and trained and well-armed. They don't have to go run to a lockbox. They don't have to get permission from any government. They take out their gun and they shoot the bad guy. You have two choices. The bad guy's already in your school. He's already going to kill some people, and then he's going to kill himself. That's what's happened in almost every one of these cases. You've got two choices. You can put masturbatory gun laws into effect that do nothing except give you some feeling of release, or you can put an armed person in the school to defend your child. That is a reasonable gun law. We can argue about who should be there, and that is a legitimate discussion. All right, it is certainly a legitimate discussion, but if you allow the teachers who want to, who volunteer to be armed, to take the same training as the cops that there's already going on, to take the, what's called the active shooter response training. If you allow teachers and school personnel to take that training at very little additional cost to police departments or to the government, you will have an armed force in the schools. You can allow retired peace officers in, which they can now legally be in there in Arizona. You can allow retired military people who've seen combat to do that, to be in the schools. Of course, they're going to be demonized by this administration, not allowed in. But you can allow a lot of people, and that's reasonable gun control. All right? Nobody says that every swinging appendage ought to be allowed into a school with a firearm. You can restrict that. That is legitimate to do that, but only if you take measures to make sure that it occurs, like putting metal detectors on the door, and most governments are not willing to spend the kind of money to do that. Number five, be clear that we know how to protect people from gun violence, which makes failures inexcusable. This isn't a situation where we don't know what to do or are stymied in the face of intractable problems. We know what it would take to prevent so many people from dying or being injured in gun violence, but those steps aren't happening because of a failure of leadership. Well, that's true. We're not arming the teachers. We're not allowing volunteer people to be in this that are armed and trained. We're not doing any of those things. That's not what the anti-freedom bigots want you to believe. But what they want you to believe is a lie.
The bastard tried to rob me. He's dead and I'm alive. He tried to pull a knife on me. I pulled my .45. All cops did was take my gun and drag me off to jail. No cops were there to help me live. But now I'm out on bail. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. I'd rather live than die. I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6.
I'd rather avoid the legal system entirely, and that's what everybody who carries a gun legitimately would rather. I will tell you that. I'm going back to Gun Violence Messaging Guide that I just became aware of, and this is to reset. You're listening to America Armed and Free. I'm your host, Charles Heller. Limit the calls. If you have a clarification about what I'm reading, fine. But points outside of this are not welcome in this hour. This is too important. And this is from their Gun Violence Messaging Guide. They call it Back of the Envelope Facts. The U.S. has the highest rate of firearms death among 25 high-income nations. Maybe if you exclude a whole bunch, but it doesn't have anywhere near the death rate. Russia has a higher murder rate than us. Thailand has a higher murder rate than us. South Africa has a much higher murder rate than us. The United States has one of the lowest murder rates in the civilized world. It's 4.2 murders per 100,000 people. And most countries in the world, except for some like Australia and a few others, and England, have more than we do. Almost anywhere you go in the world. So that's a lie. More children are shot and killed in the U.S. than anywhere in the U.S. industrialized world. In fact, the overall firearm-related death rate among U.S. children under the age of 15 is nearly 12 times higher than that among children in the 25 other industrialized nations combined. In order to get to that statistic, what you have to do is you have to include all the kids who kill each other who are prohibited possessors of guns. It is already illegal for children under 18, in most cases, to possess guns, and certainly it's illegal for them to buy a firearm from a licensed dealer. It says Americans own far more firearms, including military-style weapons and handguns, than people in other industrialized nations. We have 5% of the world's population and 50% of the world's guns. First of all, I don't accept that statistic on its face. I'd like to see proof of it. I think the communist bloc countries have just as many guns as we do. The difference is people don't admit to having them. I'll bet there's a lot of people that are armed in Mexico that won't admit it because it isn't legal for most of them to be armed. Second of all, if it is true that we have 5% of the world's population and 50% of the world's guns, hallelujah, that's called freedom. Now they talk about examples of powerful language in a way to make your arguments so that your arguments convince people. One, there's no mystery why so many people are dying and being maimed by guns in America. We have some of the weakest gun laws in the world. Garbanzo beans. We have among the strongest gun laws in the world. If you misbehave with a gun in Arizona, heck, look at Florida. A lady misbehaved with a gun. She fired a warning shot. She got 20 years in jail. That is not a lax gun law. In Arizona, if you commit an offense
with a deadly weapon. The mandatory minimum for you is 4.2 years, and that's a minimum. You could get sentenced to 10 to 15 years for it. I'm sitting across the window from two lawyers. They could tell you how many years people get sentenced to for committing crimes with guns. The idea that we have weak gun laws in the United States is balderdash. Next point. Just imagine the pain that a mother or father feels when their young child is gunned down. Yeah, let's look at the pain. What about the pain they cause the people that have that are required to shoot them? What about the pain that George Zimmerman is going through from having been forced with no other choice to shoot and kill Trayvon Martin? Do you think he wanted to do that? Only an idiot would believe that he did. Only an idiot who doesn't look at evidence would believe that George Zimmerman wanted to kill Trayvon Martin. If he'd have wanted to kill him, he'd have shot him a lot more than once. Think about that. You know where the tragedy in that is? The tragedy is in raising a child in a parentless household or a one-parent household and not having the father power to teach your child how not to attack people so they shoot you. The tragedy in Trayvon Martin was the tragedy of his parents' divorce and abandonment of his moral education. That's where the tragedy was in the George Zimmerman versus Trayvon Martin thing. Next, the NRA wants powerful, dangerous weapons in every neighborhood. That's not freedom, it's fear. Bull spit. There's powerful weapons on the hip of every police officer. Why do we give them to them? Why do the people have them, and they have every right to have them just as much as the police do? Because they have the same, their life is worth the same amount as any police officer. God is no respecter of persons. Your life is not worth more or less than that of a police officer. You have the same right to defend yourself as he does. You may not have the same access to tools if your behavior has been bad in the past, but you have the same rights to defend yourself. You should have the exact same guns that the police have. You absolutely should have the same guns that the police and the military have. Why not? Your taxes pay for them. Next, our police officers are at risk every day when they confront criminals who are armed to the teeth with military-style weapons that are freely available. First of all, they're not free. Second of all, there's a system about buying guns in the United States, and there are very strict laws about it. The fact that they're freely available means that the police haven't done their job in going after the bad guys, not that there's too many guns. And there's lots of reasons why that happens. The courts have a lot to do with it. Next, don't believe for a minute that this is about your grandfather's hunting rifle. We're talking about assault weapons, built to do the most damage possible in the shortest amount of time. Folks, there is no functional difference between the way Theodore Roosevelt's guns worked in 1905 when he was hunting with them than the way they work now. A semi-automatic is a semi-automatic. You pull the trigger, the firing pin strikes the primer ignites the powder expands, drives the bullet down the barrel and causes it to spin through the lands and grooves of the barrel and be expelled. The action comes open from the recoil energy. The empty casing hits the ejector and is ricocheted out of the rifle. The compressed spring in the mechanism drives the mechanism forward over the top cartridge. It engages the top cartridge and seats the cartridge in the firing chamber, ready for you to pull the trigger again. That is a semi-automatic. It works no differently now than it did in 1905. Now they say some ineffective language to avoid. Our experience promoting gun violence prevention measures in Congress and state legislatures has been that we always run into a brick wall of opposition built by the NRA. No, it's not. It's built by the Arizona Citizens Defense League first. First, they have to stumble over us before they trip into the NRA. And the Virginia Citizens Defense League, and the West Virginia Citizens Defense League, and the Lone Star Defense League. There is a huge network of self-defense civil rights organizations that stand between the anti-freedom bigots and the removal of your rights. There's a whole bunch of levels of organization in between them and the NRA. The NRA is just the devil that they've identified. And that's fine with us. It keeps the energy. Let them shoot at the NRA all they want. The NRA is big enough to take it and respond. But I'll tell you, that's not the only gun lobby there is. And then, next point, we're doing our best to pass stronger laws, but the NRA is incredibly powerful, and too few politicians have the courage to take them on. Yeah, look what happened in 94. Congress switched sides because they had the stupidity to oppose your rights. Now they say what the other side says and how to counter it. This comes from Gun Violence
messaging guide. And I want you all to look this up on the internet, download it, and read it, and become familiar with it. The best way to the opponents are strongest opposing arguments. The best way to reduce gun violence is to enforce the laws that are on the books, not pass more unenforceable ones. And this pamphlet says the best way to counter that argument is, our police officers work hard every day to enforce the laws we have, but they are hamstrung by the gaps and the loopholes in our laws that flood our neighborhoods with powerful, dangerous weapons. And the NRA's lobbyists work to weaken our gun laws, and they are making the job of police harder and putting us all at risk. Garbanzo beans. There are plenty of laws available to enforce against the people who are criminals. There is no lack whatsoever. There is no such thing as a tool they don't have in the struggle to fight crime. The problem is they don't want to fight crime. That the anti-freedom bigots don't want to fight crime. What they want to do is be in control, because they fear you're being armed more than they fear crime. I want to encourage you to be vigorous, not violent. Be vigilant, not vituperative. Look this up on the internet. Gun Violence Messaging Guide. Look it up, download it, become familiar with it. You should be as good in your argument as I am. There is no reason why you cannot be if you read this and think about it, because it will become apparent to you. Remember that in any society, the closer individual liberty is to the individual citizen, the happier and the more prosperous that entire citizenry will be. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller.